Hi to you. I'll tell you, man, it's affecting, you know, I'm looking at the gas prices. It matters to my bottom line. It also food. I was talking about this the other day. The cost of food is starting to grab hold.
Well I think it's being more remarkably felt now that these business cycles happen and these kinds of swings in cost happen. I think we've had more of a perfect storm now, so that the level of the increase that we're now experiencing is remarkable, and we haven't often had a run up in price of gas like this.
So usually the air of oil incrementally is. Well, you can accept it better, I guess.
Well, it's usually just not quite as dramatic.
Right.
The Arab oil embargo created a dramatic price increase in oil and gas, and this is probably the next one that has been this dramatic. But we Americans, as the middle class has developed and evolved with all these double income earning spouses, you know, we talked last week about what is it like to have a family that earns $100,000. Well, you'd think that would be comfortably right in the middle class. And that $100,000 family, because they don't have the kind of safety net provided to them by the government, we could double the taxes that $100,000 family paid, and they would, if they got free health care and free education and an adequate
pension, could get ahead.
And yeah, they would be better off. They would be, their cash flow would be better even with higher taxes. And when these things happen to them, they wouldn't be living as close to the edge on this paycheck to paycheck basis, because, you know, in Europe, families that are of modest income can afford vacations. Their family gets health care provided to them. They live a comfortable and less stressful life. It's very stressful to be an American middle class person now, living paycheck to paycheck.
So Sandy, people, let's say the family makes $100,000 a year, and it's, you know, you make decisions and you have to live with the decisions you make. Because they make $100,000 a year, some are living in $400,000 homes, which is more than they really should be able to afford.
Well, I mean, you know, the fact is that you take, though, the average family, and instead of anecdotally trying to find one that makes that kind of a mistake, most of them, and maybe the housing industry was making it possible for those people to make the mistake, because you could go get a mortgage that you had no business having. But, you know, when we did the math on this $100,000 family, they don't have many choices that they can make. You know, they can decide they're going to live and spend $3,000 a month or thereabouts.
Right.
It's $36,000 a year on housing, coming out of the $100,000 gross and the $80,000 net after tax, and then you subtract everything after that. There's not a lot of selective choosing.
A lot of meat left on the bones.
No, there's not much meat left on the bone. You can see why any family and We all grew up in mature adults in the early part of our careers, knowing that next year we'd make more than we made this year. There were annual raises.
Right.
That doesn't really exist anymore. The notion or the knowledge that you'll make more next year than you did this year because of the passage of 1 year, because that could give you comfort that you could spend a little more. You know, you could put yourself a little bit on the edge, moving your standard of living up as you expected your income to go up.
So we talk about the family that makes $100,000, and really that's not much anymore. But there's so many families, $50,000.
Well, the median income for a household in the United States, median meaning that the number of people earn less than half the number. It's not the average, it's the median. I think that median number is like $76,000.
Yeah, okay, so now, all those people under, they're really catching hell now.
Oh yeah, well,
and
this is household income.
Yes,
so, yeah,
and so there are people who, you know, they don't have the electric, they can't buy the electric car, and so the car they're driving, 10, 15 years old, patching it up, trying to keep it going to get to whatever job they're working on, Sandy. There's so many people like that, and gas is $5, going to be $5 a gallon, right? That's such a tremendous number of families that it's, you know, I mean, we can't just push them or ignore them, right? I mean, they're at some point, they have to be included in things, you know, and that was why Joe Biden, again, with the Build Back Better, was so critically important. We see it now, right now, more than probably even when they talked about Build Back Better, right?
Well, I mean, this is another, you know, this is another example for us to look at and see how we moved away from sort of sound planning and we let private interests take control. So then the one I'm pointing at now would be the automobile industry in the 1950s. You know, if we had the streetcar system that we had back then, if we had a public transit system that was really sound, people have an option to putting gasoline in their car. They could start deciding they would take the streetcar downtown. And that's what they did. And in fact, the Americans before 1955 didn't have two cars. They had one car.
Right.
And the reason they could have one car is they had the streetcar as well, and they had the other ways to get around. So, I mean,
so public
public transit is kind of failing in America as compared to other countries. So it's another reason why other countries have an easier time absorbing this kind of an issue than we do, because we allowed the interest like the automobile interest to cause almost every city that had a streetcar system to decide to take it out. Get persuaded that the public had no business subsidizing streetcars so that people could ride public transit. Meanwhile, the public was rapidly shelling out money to build highways for the car, which was, of course, subsidizing the car.
So you won't say that there's short-sightedness. Clearly, we couldn't continue with streetcars when people had the ability to, you know, streetcars were obsolete, wouldn't you say?
No.
Okay.
No, they aren't obsolete. And, you know, you go to any foreign city.
In America, they're obsolete.
Some cities, they still exist. So you can go to San Francisco. Everyone thinks San Francisco is wonderful. You can go to New York and the subway system is fantastic.
Right, the subway system.
And every city that has a subway system has something that's quite fantastic in terms of ease of getting around.
That's true.
Speed of getting around.
That's absolutely true.
So, no, I mean, it's really just the shift. America was intent on moving into the modern era of the automobile and turning its back on what had been to see what could be. And, you know, the potential of the automobile was this wonderful potential to live in the countryside and drive to work. And it was all about sprawl without understanding the difficulties that would be created by sprawl.
You know, Sandy, you know, you just have these answers that we know are true, but we don't want to hear.
Well, no, isn't fault. This is just like evolution. This is the way. This is the way it went down.
But the pain that comes along with it for so many Americans, I guess, is a part of it.
Well, that's why hopefully the pain, instead of deciding that it's somehow the person sitting in office right now that's the cause of this, maybe the pain will wake them up and decide that they ought to, however, become very actively involved in politics.
All right, got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We're going to be joined by Mr. Manny Perez out of Florida. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.